Okay, please lie on your back.
I can't hear very well anymore.
No problem. Find yourself a spot and I'll stay nearby. Okay, so we'll begin by taking up or noting the contact with the floor. So if you're familiar with awareness through movement, you likely have some sense of that. If you're new to it, the idea here is that we are considering the experience of contact with the floor, your personal experience. And of course, it informs you a little bit about your state as you begin the lesson. And so when you're left to your own devices, so to speak, you see what stands out, you see whether that's a puzzling idea or a clear one, where you start, where you go next. But we can also, or you can also, approach this in a structured way, and you could begin, say, with the contact of the left heel between you and the floor. Is where that contact is located, in that particular place. And then it has characteristics or qualities as well as a location. So it could be a sense of pressure or firmness or softness or roughness, something for you that's personal and idiosyncratic. But you have some sense of your heel and where it is, and that it's the left heel. And maybe something about that, as the leg rests, suggests something about the position of the foot. So is that patch of contact a little more to the outside of the heel, or vertically relative to yourself, up and down? What part of the heel is in contact with the floor? What's the shape of that contact like? And then come over to the right. So for most of us, immediately you note some difference from the right side, between the right side and the left. Maybe that contact is larger or smaller, firmer or softer, clearer or more vague, and maybe your ability to locate it seems a little different. Then you can come back to the left leg and move up, and again, for most of us, there's space behind the left ankle. Maybe you have a sense of the shape of that space, which is the shape defined by yourself at the leg and your sense of the floor behind. So your sense of the floor behind, a sense is a loose word here in that you don't actually sense it. You kind of infer that the floor is there, or you feel the floor in these other locations. It's likely that it's there also behind the ankle. And you come up the left leg and find the knee and the upper leg, the thigh, the left buttock, and know what's in contact with the floor and what's not so in contact with the floor. Here it's possibly less clear where you're in contact and where you're not. Why don't you just get a sense of it or make a guess about it? What's touching, what's not? Likely some locations very clearly you feel are in contact with the floor, others not so much. And you compare the whole left leg with the whole right leg. And then the two sides of the pelvis. You can make similar kinds of comparisons there, where the buttock presses into the floor, how it's different from right to left. And in this way, we make distinctions about our experience as an aspect of developing awareness of what we're doing, how we rest and how we assess that, how we rest on the floor. So you come up to the low back and note the two sides and what's in contact, where the pelvis or the buttocks come away from the floor, whether the back is clearly away or clearly in contact with the mat behind you, and the two sides of the rib cage. What you can infer or know about the space behind the low back, bounded by the pelvis and the ribs, which are in contact with the floor. And of course, this tells you something about the shape of your trunk here at the moment, at the beginning of the lesson. Note the left shoulder, how it's arrayed on the floor, and then the right. Whether there's difference, what those differences are or are like. Then take up the left arm and the right arm. Immediately you note how the fingers rest on the floor on each side. Is it the fingertips that are in contact? How many of them? On the left, how many on the right? Some part of the side of the hand or the heel of the hand, the palm. What's that space like between the arm and the trunk, the torso, the body proper? You come back to the center and find where you come away from the floor. As you move up toward the neck, come back in contact with the floor behind the head or at the back of the head. Infer something about the shape of the neck and the cervical spine, the orientation of the head and face. And then note your breathing, both that you are breathing and what makes up breathing in your immediate sense of it. Where do you note movement? Where do you have sensation of the passage of air? Perhaps at the nostrils, somewhere in the throat or the lungs, perhaps the ribs move a little, perhaps it's more felt in the abdomen. And note that that goes in two directions. There's the inhalation and the exhalation. And then just relate a distance for yourself, that is between the pelvis and the head, whatever that means for you at the moment. It could be from that point of contact behind, it could be where you find your hip joints, clear or unclear as that may be, to the base of the skull, if you can infer that a little bit, or you could also consider, say, the tip of the nose to the pubic bone, the front of the pelvis there. And just get a sort of overall sense from this scan of your contact with the floor. Your breathing, etc., sort of what your starting state is here. Maybe it's already changed in the last few minutes. And then comfortably remember it so you can refer to it later, something about it perhaps. Before we begin moving intentionally, just read a couple of brief paragraphs from Feldenkrais's Awareness Through Movement. He speaks here about the components of the waking state. He makes distinctions that are interesting in the process of doing awareness through movement. Four components make up the waking state: sensation, feeling, thought, and movement. Each one serves as a basis for a whole series of methods of correction or learning. In sensation, we include, in addition to the five familiar senses, the kinesthetic sense, which comprises pain, orientation in space, the passage of time, and rhythm. In feeling, we include, apart from the familiar emotions of joy, grief, anger, and so forth, self-respect, inferiority, supersensitivity, and other conscious and unconscious emotions that color our lives. Thinking includes all functions of intellect, such as the opposition of right and left, good and bad, right and wrong, understanding, knowing that one understands, classifying things, recognizing rules, imagining, knowing what is sensed and felt, remembering all the above, and so on. Movement includes all temporal and spatial changes in the state and configurations of the body and its parts, such as breathing, eating, speaking, blood circulation, and digestion. So you can see Feldenkrais makes some makes interesting distinctions about what you can find and experience along these lines. And he goes on to state in brief that in actuality, they're never separable. You experience some sort of composite of these things. And so this is the terrain of awareness through movement. All right, bend the two knees, stand the feet, so the soles of the feet come to the floor and the knees are forward in the direction of the ceiling, forward relative to you. Find whether that's comfortable or not, that the knees are balanced. You can adjust them a little bit as you go along. And note how this changes the configuration of the spine or the trunk a little bit. Maybe it changes the position of your head even. And now begin to tilt the pelvis on the floor such that the tailbone comes a little closer to the floor and the low back comes away from the floor, and then return to this neutral position. So it's possible that you pull with the feet a little, or maybe you do this a little more with the trunk, but you make a little space behind the low back so that the pelvis rolls on the floor, and then you return to neutral, your starting configuration. And make each movement discrete, so you pause between. And note for yourself, did you immediately try to go as far as you possibly could? Did you start with a small movement? And as you repeat this little action, note where you initiate it, how the space behind the low back changes, whether you notice any change in pressure in the feet, movement in the head. That's easier. All right, and then leave that, lengthen the legs and rest. Note your contact with the floor. Maybe even after just a few small movements or this change in the position of the legs, you note some difference in the sensation through the trunk or how you experience the length of the legs or the arms, or something more abstract like a sense of flatness or depth. And these may change as we go along. So stand the feet once more. Bring the knees forward, bend them, and stand the feet. And now take up the other tilt of the pelvis. So tilt the pelvis so that the tailbone between the legs comes away from the floor a little bit and the low back comes into the floor. And you return to neutral between movements and make each one discrete. Note here, is that movement a little larger or smaller than the other direction? Do you use the legs more or do you use the middle of yourself more? And do you change your breathing when you take up this movement? So maybe you find your, or you can infer or begin to know where your hip joints are a little bit here. That there's movement in the hip joint or the pelvis relative to the bones of the legs. And note if you note movement through the pelvis up in the direction of the head. And you see, too, is this a straight line in the direction of the head or is it a little different on the left and right? I'm going to leave it, extend the legs, and rest for a moment. For us in awareness through movement, rest is, of course, sort of a pause to refresh between iterations of things, to note change, or simply to leave off the use of the attention. All right, bend the knees, stand the feet, and begin to move between these two movements. So you alternate between taking the tailbone to the floor and away, which is to say, taking the low back away from the floor and to the floor, moving the pelvis in this way that you tip it along this vertical axis, along the center of yourself. And note, do you feel how the pelvis and the spine are deeply connected? And so when the pelvis moves, the spine moves. There's a change in the shaping of the spine at the low back, but you may also find that that movement of the spine reaches up as far as the rib cage, the neck, the head perhaps. So as the pelvis rolls on the floor, feel how far up you note movement. You note the change in contact behind yourself, perhaps how the rib cage moves relative to the shoulders as you make this movement. And you leave your breathing free of the movement, so you can breathe with the movement or against it or independent of it. And pause, extend the legs, rest. And if for any reason you're uncomfortable with the legs fully extended like this, when you rest, you can rest with the legs bent. If you need to change your position during a rest, of course, move to one side or pause in the way that is comfortable for you. And then bend the knees, stand the feet once more, and imagine sort of a line extending forward from the face and a line extending forward from the pelvis or the hips in a way that they're parallel. And so if you move the pelvis, you would move this line, it would tilt. And so with that in mind, legs are bent and you take up this action of tilting the pelvis one way and the next, and note how that line of the pelvis tips toward the head and away. It's a sort of abstraction, the use of thinking. And then correlate the line extending from the face with the one at the pelvis. So when the pelvis line moves, the head line moves. Keep them parallel to one another. You could even imagine there's another line between them that fixes them. So when the pelvis tips, the head also moves. When the head moves, the pelvis also moves. So you find what the correlation there is. As the low back comes into the floor, the spine pushes up through the ribs, pushes into the head. If you can find that action. And as the tailbone comes toward the floor and the low back comes away from the floor, you may draw the head so that the chin moves a little bit, the space between the chin and the chest changes. Just look for that, and if you don't find it, create it a little bit intentionally. Gradually discover how it is the case that the pelvis and the head are connected. Of course, abstractly we know that, but we can find it in experience as well. All right, and then several times, imagine that you initiate this action from the head, that you tip the head so that the chin comes a little closer to the chest and then away from the chest, and that draws the movement of the pelvis along. It's not that you push the pelvis with the head, but you can use the movement of the head as the kind of initiation of this more full movement that includes the pelvis. The hips rest on the floor. You don't lift them. They just tips, rolls. The pelvis rolls one way and the other, up in the direction of the head, down in the direction of the feet. All right, then leave it, extend the legs, rest. Bend the two knees, stand the feet. Now, this time, rather than tipping the pelvis along this line up and down, tip it from to the right and then come back to the middle. So the right side of the pelvis comes a little away from the floor. I'm sorry, the left side, as you tip the knees and the pelvis to the right and then back to the center. Just exploring this one side initially. And then leave the knees in the forward in the direction of the ceiling. And check out this tipping of the pelvis so that where the knees stay forward. So the knees point at the ceiling and the pelvis tips to the right and back to the middle. Of course, they move a little bit. It's not to try to prevent them from moving. It's just to keep this orientation of the legs. So now there's a differentiation in the hip joints. And then pause in the middle and try tipping the pelvis to the left and back to the middle with the knees forward. And you see if that interferes with your breathing, either because you're working at it or your attention is drawn in a particular way, or mechanically. And then with the knees forward, go back and forth all the way to the left and to the right, where all the way means comfortably, comfortably taking the pelvis to the left and right. And know what happens if the knees stay forward and the pelvis turns a little to the left and right. What happens in the hip joints? Does it give you a clearer idea where they are? Something different is happening in each hip joint as you move to one side and then the other. And then add in this idea of lines extending from the nose and the pelvis and tip them at the same time. So whether it's artifice or it's something you can find, as the pelvis tips to the left, the head turns equally to the left. As the pelvis turns to the right, the head turns to the right. So you synchronize them. Make it small enough so you can be clear about what you're doing, comfortable enough. Note how that movement carries through the middle of yourself. Then leave it, extend the legs, and rest. So now we've explored the tipping the pelvis in an up and down and side to side. The title of this lesson that Feldenkrais said is Differentiation of Pelvic Movements by Means of an Imaginary Clock. So perhaps you can imagine what comes after exploring left and right and up and down. But either way, we'll begin. So stand the 2 feet. And imagine a clock, an analog clock, behind your pelvis on the floor. So this is basically just to take a familiar understanding and use it for a kind of directional and spatial reference. And so if the clock is laying on the floor, you can imagine that 12 o'clock is in the direction of the head, 6 o'clock in the direction of the tail bone or feet, and then that 3 o'clock is off to the left. Is that right? No, that's left. That's 3 o'clock is to the left and 9 o'clock is to the right. And so now begin to explore that a little bit of a tip so that maybe you could imagine arcing the pelvis from 12 o'clock, take it to 12 o'clock, so you tip toward 12, toward the head, and then explore that little arc from 12 over to 1 o'clock to the left. And then you come back to 12 And then you can arc through 1 to 2 o'clock and come back to 12. And then arc through 1 and 2 o'clock over to 3 o'clock, at which point the pelvis is simply tilted to the left. And then you arc back to 12, where the pelvis is simply tilted up in the direction of the head. And then at any point you can let it go and completely pause, but then starting at 12 or at 3 with the pelvis tilted up or to the left, that is, explore that little circle that the pelvis can make on the floor between 12 and 3. And note, does the head move when you move the pelvis? Is it involved? Could it be involved? All right. Pause for just a moment. You can leave the legs standing if you like. And think it through how you begin to move to 12. Take the pelvis up toward 12 so that the low back comes toward the floor. And then begin the small arc off to 11 on the right. And back to 12. You build it up as before, going through 1 to 2 and then back. And then through 1 to 2 over to 3, at which time the pelvis is simply turned to the right, neither tipped up or down, and then find your way back to 12. So now we're using this the clock as a way to, in a sense, connect the tip of the pelvis up in the direction of the head and the tip of the pelvis off to one side or the other. And note for yourself, is this different than it was going toward the other side? Is it clearer in your imagination when you go between the numerals on the clock on the left and right? All right, then leave it, extend the legs, and rest. All right, bend the two feet, bend the two knees, stand the feet. And then take the pelvis to the left or the right as you prefer and explore that whole half circle at the top of the clock as you go from simply tip to the right or left to simply tip to the other side. And in the middle is 12, where your legs are, or your pelvis is neutral and it's tipped toward the head. The knees stay in the direction of the ceiling so that you articulate the hip joints. And note, is there any point in the movement of the pelvis here where the head is drawn along or not so much? What are the two sides like? Next time you're relatively central, somewhere around 12, just pause. And now with the legs standing, just imagine that line between 12 and 6 o'clock. So now rather than just making this about movement, relate to this image you have of a clock or the shape of a clock behind you. So with the knees bent, the feet standing, take the pelvis as if you're going to take the center of the pelvis along that line between 12 and 6, back and forth. And is that relatively clear? Is that lead to a difference in action or sensation on the left and right? And allow the head to come along or intentionally bring the head along so that if you imagined a clock behind the head, it would also would be rolling from 12 to 6. And pause for a moment, and with the pelvis and head neutral, imagine a line between 3 and 9 o'clock, excuse me, on your clock, and take the pelvis side to side so that it rolls along that line from left to right, from 3 to 9, from 9 to 3. Notice, do you do that differently on the left and right? Is there a way that the rib cage is involved or the different use of the musculature of the trunk? And then bring the head along too, so that perhaps a little more intentionally, as the pelvis goes to 3, the head goes to 3. As the pelvis goes to 9, the head goes to 9. And it too goes along a line from left to right. All right, extend the legs and rest. And bend the two knees, stand the feet. Now tip the pelvis down towards 6, so the tailbone comes a little closer to the floor. Let the head come along with, so the chin comes a little closer to the chest. You see if you can find the way that the movement of the pelvis draws the spine to pull the head a little bit so that you don't have to work the neck so much. And then begin to explore that quarter off toward 3 o'clock, in the same way where you head from 6 to 5 and then back, then through 5 to 4 and then back to 6, and then from 6 to 5 to 4 to 3 and back, noting that when it's 6, it's a simple movement of just tipping down, and at off to the side, it's just a simple movement of being tipped to the side, and then you find the arc that connects those two. Then next time you come back to 6 o'clock, explore the other quadrant off to the left. Moving from 6 to 3, or 6 to 9, excuse me. And then go from 9 to 3 through 6 o'clock. So you can start wherever you are and just build it up. Explore and see, does the head come along? Is the head drawn along when the pelvis moves? It may be quite fine. It may be something that you have difficulty finding. You can add it a little bit intentionally, but you see if you can find a way that in some way the movement of the pelvis draws the head along. All right, then leave it, extend the legs, and rest. And stand the feet once more. And now tip the pelvis toward 12 and explore all the way around the clock, going from 1 to 2 to 3 and then back to 12. You can go one digit at a time or a couple at a time. And just build it up that you work your way around the clock from passing through 3 to 4 to 5 to 6, and up the other side, 7, 8, 9. You build it up slowly. At any point, stop and turn back in the other direction. Just try out this one direction. When you get back around to 12, turn around and go back the way you came. So take care with the movement so that you are clear when you pass through each numeral. And know what's happening with the head. Is there a little clock there, perhaps? Note how the movement of the pelvis means that there's action in the two hip joints, which perhaps you can sense. Note if you're interfering with your breathing or not. The contact of the whole trunk may change on the floor a little bit. And then if you are still interested in exploring this a little bit, please do so for a few more movements. And when you're ready to rest, just come to rest, extend the legs. And note your contact with the floor here. Is there any difference in how you contact the floor, what's more in contact or perhaps less? The quality of your breathing like? Now stand the feet once again. And imagine that clock on the floor behind you. And imagine a corresponding clock on you, on the back of your pelvis, as if it was painted on there. And going in whichever direction that you like, clearly take this image of the clock on you and bring the numerals one at a time into contact with this image of a clock on the floor. You just work from one to the next in whichever direction you like. You can pause and turn back wherever you want. Perhaps you'll go from 9 to 3 and then from 12 to 7, something like that. You can explore parts of the clock and see that you can clearly place your pelvis where you would like relative to this idea of orienting to an image on the floor. And note if that changes for you, what this is, how you do this, or whether it becomes more clear. And if one of the digits or numerals is a little unclear to you or is hard to find, you locate the one to the either side of it. If 4 is hard to find, you find 3 and you find 5 and you work back a little and forth a little bit and infer it, and you just clarify yourself how to circle the pelvis on the floor. And perhaps on the back of the head. You can hold that loosely in your attention or clearly as you prefer. Be sure you explore both directions. Note how the pelvis pushes and pulls the spine, whether it's straightforward to relate an image on yourself and one that you project onto the floor behind you. And wherever you are, just leave it, extend the legs and rest. Stand only the right leg. Leave the left leg long. Note what that's like in the pelvis and the low back, just extending the one leg. And now begin to circle the pelvis around clockwise in this configuration. What's required? You have to do something a little bit differently when the legs are like so. Now the pelvis pushes the spine in one direction and the extended leg pushes and pulls that as well. So perhaps you can even note that maybe there's a little clock or clock-like action behind the left heel on the floor. And you see that you try to make the clock, the action of the circling around the clock as clear as you can comfortably. Try the other direction. Could be that you note circling somewhere else. But certainly have it behind the pelvis. You can look for it behind the head and behind that left heel as well if you can find that. Right, then pause, extend that bent right leg and rest for a moment. And stand the left leg and try counterclockwise here first and work your way around the circle with the pelvis. So the other leg from before. And see what this one's like. If it was the right leg before, it's the left leg now. If it's the other one, Ralph. But try it out here. How is it different on this side in this configuration? This leg bent and the other leg long. Do the clocks appear more readily? What do you need to do in the middle of yourself around that left hip joint? How well does the movement of the, or clearly does the movement of the pelvis carry through the, in the direction of the head or the heel? And you try going in one direction and the other. Let me just do a small amount of this. So extend the leg and rest for a moment. Now stand the 2 feet and put the left foot somewhere kind of on the center line and cross the right leg over the left. So the heel hangs down toward the floor, and the knees are close, the back of the right knee is near the thigh just above the left knee. And here in this configuration, try out circling in one direction, making a full clock, starting wherever you like. And try the other direction as well, starting and stopping as you wish. And note where else you find clocks behind yourself, possibly the head, possibly to, in some degree, the heel or foot of the standing leg. Keep your breathing undisturbed by the movement. And the movement undisturbed by your breathing. And you see, though the references are the same as before, this different configuration changes the action. In some respect, we're doing the same thing. In another respect, of course, it's something quite different. And a couple of times, just go smoothly around and all the way in one direction and then the other. Then change over the crossing of the legs. So the right leg stands and the left leg crosses over and hangs down over it. Put your right foot where it's comfortable, and try circling in one direction or the other here. How's it different immediately? How's it different from the other side? What's required in the 2 hip joints? How's the head included or not? Is one direction or a part of the clock more clear or less clear or more available or less available? Particularly, you can compare it to how you did it on, with the other configuration of the legs, as you remember that. All right, then leave it and extend the legs and pause for a moment. Stand the 2 feet. And here with the both legs on the both feet on the floor, try a circle around in one direction and the other. A little quicker or a little smaller, vary it in some way. Just see what that's like for you. Include the head. note how the spine moves through the rib cage or with the rib cage, how the space behind the low back changes. If there's subtle movement in the knees. Perhaps away from the head and toward on one side or the other at different points in the clock. Really include the clock behind the head or the turning of the head, the rolling of the head around the clock. And pause in the middle for just a moment and think that you can move the pelvis to 12 and the head to 12. And it's possible that you could take the pelvis counterclockwise and the head clockwise. So you think it through for yourself and try it out. Make it slow. You can start simply. Maybe you just want to start by going side to side or so that the sides cross. But see if you can do that without adding a lot of extra effort. Maybe something to try again later. Of course, though the movements can be integrated, they can also be differentiated in this way. But 6 is still 6 on both clocks, 12 is still 12, it's just that the direction of rotation has changed. See if that gets you to hold your breath, or whether you can leave your breath, the movements of breathing, uninhibited. Then whether you got it especially clearly or not, just to return to circling together, same direction clockwise or counterclockwise with the head and the pelvis, a little bit in one direction, a little bit in the other. Note what happens to the spine in the middle of yourself that connects these two large masses, the head and the pelvis. Then leave it, extend the legs, and rest. Now here, note your contact with the floor. In a general sense or in some specific ways. And compare it with what you recall from the beginning of the lesson. What's changed? What's the same? Do you rest on the floor a little differently? Is more of you in contact in behind the back, behind the shoulders? Somewhere else? Is the way the head rests on the floor different? And what's your sense of your breathing? What's your breathing like? What's it composed of here at the end of the lesson? All right, when you're ready to get up, slowly roll to one side and pause there, and then gradually come up to sit and pause there, and then find your way to standing, kind of preserving this quality of attention that you've developed over the lesson. See if you can avoid adjusting yourself or fixing yourself in that process. Let your clothing be until you can come to stand for a moment and consider what you are like, what you sense, what you note in standing. When you come to stand, just get your feet comfortably under your pelvis and note what it's like to be in this configuration but upright. Note how the arms hang, what your sense of the two hip joints is, how the head rests at the top of the spine, and the rib cage is arranged. Shift a little left to right, forward and back over your feet, and take a little walk around. Thank you for your attention, everyone.